Check this baby out.
The planet has a fever.
And the only prescription is more cowbell.
Oh, yeah, that's right. Hello.
Oh, no, they're back.
Testing.
No, yeah, no. Oh, yes.
1, 2, 1, 2.
Gigi Edgley, I play Chiana on Farscape, and I'm the host of Jim Henson's Creature Shot Challenge, and you're listening to Two Downies Dudes.
Julian, what's a shithawk? Some kind of a shitty bird that swoops down and puts poop onto you.
I'm Eric, and I can't be on the podcast today because I have emphysema.
I'm Robbie, and I will be on the podcast today because I quit smoking. This is podcast number 75 of Two Downies Dudes for September 12, 2015. In this episode, we're joined by Nick Braley and John Selmer to talk about health, fitness, and spirituality. Come on, dude. So this week is going to be a little different from most weeks. Not so much of the comedy, food reviews, stuff like that. But today, Eric is missing, and we're joined by Nick Braley, owner of Acadia Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu, and his associate, John Selmer. And they're going to talk to us a bit about health, fitness, and spirituality, which... strange that Eric's missing for that topic, because it's obviously one of his favorite topics, which, John, you don't know Eric, but let's just say he's not in the greatest shape. His fitness regimen pretty much consists of once a week he works out by walking up these three stairs and then cursing me for living on the third floor.
Yeah.
Diet mostly consists of Pepsi, gas station pizza, and Marbreds. So
sounds like this American life.
Yeah, amen. He's living the dream. So he's really bummed that he's not. I know, strangely enough, he's sick, so he couldn't make it.
He's sick after what you just said.
Yeah.
I can't figure
that. You would think that any bacteria could live through all that torment.
A perfectly created American citizen.
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah, so I love you, Eric, and I miss you. So, yeah, I figured, you know, we could kind of attack this from three different directions, because for me personally and through my experience, it's all equally important, mind, body, and soul.
Mm-hmm.
So I figured first we could start talking about the body aspect, health and fitness. And I know... most people approach it as a, you know, from the standpoint of how.
Mm-hmm.
How do I get in shape? How do I, what do I do? But I've found for me that it's more important to look at why.
Right.
Other than the obvious health benefits, the, you know, the shit that you see on posters and PSAs of, oh, you know, blah, 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 your cholesterol and heart disease and all this stuff. But,
mm-hmm.
You know, aside from that, tying into the other... to, you know, mind, body, and soul, why would you say you guys choose kind of a lifestyle of health and fitness?
Yeah, I have to feel optimal, or else I feel something's wrong. It's as simple as that. Even if I go against what I know, what I'm supposed to be doing for myself, I feel at odds with myself, and everything... goes downhill from there. So it's almost like it's not even a choice for me. It's hard to explain in that sense, where I don't have a goal per se. It's just a push that I have to have in order to meet my own internal standards, and I don't understand why they're there or where they're from, but they are there, and it has to be daily that I meet them, or else there's something off, and I can't quite pinpoint what that is though. So
gotcha. Yeah. All right, how about you, John?
I enjoy serotonin, dopamine, and endorphins.
Yeah.
So that would be that the happy internal drugs that we have in our body that can be released through exercise. So for me, it's more about feeling good mentally and physically. So the two kind of go together. So
right.
I would say that's why I kind of move in that direction.
Yeah, you definitely get a certain high from exercising, for sure. So... Like, for me, it's even longer lasting. Like, after working out, you feel great for, you know, a certain period of time, right? And then it's, you know, you go up and you come down, just like with anything. That's why exercising can also become a drug.
100%.
You know, so
oh, yeah,
it's like, you know, and that's where, like, digging even deeper is important, too. And that's where I guess we'll get into the soul part of it, that aspect of it. Because you see the people that are running, like, a marathon every day. You know, they might be running from something. You know, I don't know if they could actually just go sit on the river or under a tree and hang
They're
out.
They're not present in their life.
Yeah, yes. Exactly.
Yeah, yeah, so, just running from something.
Yeah, it's some equivalent, in my opinion, to needing a fix if you're constantly having to have that push.
Yeah.
You know,
well, that's the way our society's kind of set up now, too. It's to really not be present. It's to, no matter what you're doing, is you have 10 other things you're doing at the same time, so you're trying to multitask instead of being present and sitting in your seat, no matter what it is. Whatever kind of exercise, whatever you like to do, whether it's just sit by the river or go out and you're a tennis player, you do jiu-jitsu, whatever, you know?
Oh, yeah. Definitely. It feels like there is like a, the society's kind of a mass distraction, taking you away from yourself at everywhere you look.
Right.
You know, so you have to remove yourself from all that in order to be able to be with yourself, in my opinion. So.
Yeah, I can absolutely relate. And, you know, I know for me, I have the same thing now. I haven't always had it. I'm an unbalanced person, you know, naturally by design.
Mm-hmm.
But I find that it's important for me to make a constant effort to balance those things out, because I do enjoy working out, and like you said, the endorphins and all that, I can definitely get into that. But I find that it's like whack-a-mole, you know, and if I'm acting compulsively, I have to take a look at that and say, okay, let's see, I just worked out for 2 hours this morning. Why do I feel like tonight I need to go lift weights, I need to do something, I need to go for a run? And that's usually displaced anxiety that's coming from somewhere else, usually one of the other places, you know, mind or soul. Either I'm not being challenged creatively, or you know, there's something going on with me emotionally or whatever. But you can definitely use one to compensate for the others. But you know, I can relate to the part about having it be kind of a mandate in your mind. You know, I strive for physical improvement along with everything else, and I think that's an important thing for anybody that doesn't just want to get in shape, but that wants to make it a lifestyle, is I treat it like work. You know, I wake up some mornings and I don't feel like going to work. I'm not in the mood.
Right.
But what do? I go to work and say, oh, shit, this is going to suck. I'm tired because I didn't sleep much last night, or I don't feel great, so work's going to suck. I do the same thing with a workout. You know, on my nights that I have my designated workouts, I say, okay, it's Tuesday night, I should go lift weights, I'm feeling tired. Well, that means the workout's going to suck. Rather than, well, I'm feeling tired, so maybe I'll skip tonight. Maybe I'll do tomorrow night. Maybe I'll, you know, just skip this one. It's just become not negotiable in my life like anything else. So if somebody says, hey, want to go out to a movie, it's, oh, shit, I can't. I got to work out.
Right.
You know.
Yeah, I've personally, like, I've lightened my stance on a regimented workout routine, and I've based it more on how I feel, to be honest. If I feel like I have the energy to put out, then I will. If I don't feel like I have it, I know the next day I'm going to be so drained that I'm going to have no energy to put towards mind, body, or soul.
Gotcha.
And it's almost pointless for me at that point. So, yeah, you know, a certain amount of energy we all have. And you got to figure out, where do you want to put it? You know, you could be the greatest power lifter in Down East Maine if you wanted. You could be able to sit still for 24 hours while meditating. You might be the best in Down East Maine doing it, you know. So there's a certain amount of energy, and you have to figure out where you want to put it, how you want to put it, and when. And so that's where the balance comes into play. So for me, if I'm feeling off, and I can tell mentally when I feel off because I have this need, I feel like I always need something else. That means I'm trying to fill a void somewhere. If I have that feeling and I'm not content in myself, then I probably need to put my energy towards the soul aspect compared to going and lifting weights that day. So this is all new to me, like this year, is seeing this, because I would always just be like, train 7 days a week, you know, lift, you know, jiu-jitsu, lift 3 days a week, and there was no alternative. But then I was just, yeah, I got better at those things, but I was left empty, constant need of something else, like this void. And don't get me wrong, it always comes and goes, but I feel like I'm just starting to notice how you have a certain amount of energy, you got to put it where you need it, and then the rest can follow.
Definitely, yeah. And that's the Bro Dudeman philosophy, and that's kind of where that character came from, is, you know, those guys are out there, and a lot of people, you know, could get branded with that, and that's why it was cool to have you and Chris on the show as guys that are more balanced people. You know, it's not about, oh, look how tough we are, blah, blah, blah. But, you know, those are the people that, with that whack-a-mole, they just, that physical part of it is everything. You know, it's about the appearance and, you know, getting back to the why of fitness as a lifestyle. You know, I think part of it for me initially was aesthetic. In a way that could be perceived as being shallow. But at the same time, it was something that was important to me, not just to show other people, you know, look how strong I am or look at the way I look, but for me to recognize that, because I grew up being scrawny, and I was picked on in school. I was also a punk kid, so I brought a lot of it on myself. But yeah, some of it was well deserved, but it just, you know, it sucked. It's almost like the fat kid being made fun of his entire life. It was almost just as bad, or maybe even worse, because like a fat kid, I'd get made fun of, but unlike a fat kid, I was a lot easier to beat up or put in a locker or a trash can or whatever.
Right.
So it was cool to me when I started getting into fitness, and I was like, oh wow, look at this, I'm capable of that. And it unlocked something in me mentally to realize that this is just a physical form. I can do anything with this I choose if I put the effort in, like you said.
Right.
And, you know, it's the way that I present myself to the world, you know, and I see that with you guys. You guys have got some tattoos and stuff like that, and it's part of that, you know, showing the world who you are, which I think is important.
Yeah, and I feel like you're kind of treated by others the way you appear. It's, even if that sounds superficial, it's just a fact, too.
Oh, absolutely.
If you want to be treated and respected a certain way, you might want to look respectful.
Right. I'm shit out of luck, then.
I'm not saying I'm there, but, you know, it's just how it works.
That's true, and that's something I've noticed lately, too, is, you know, especially in, like, the professional aspect of life, which is a part of life and is something that's important. I've noticed that if I put a little more effort into my appearance, it's not about, oh, you know, look at that guy, he looks nice, but it shows the world, like, hey, look, I'm taking the few minutes in the morning to not just roll out of bed with my, you know, hair sticking up and just throw on whatever dirty t-shirt I have.
Right.
You know, it's representative of who I am professionally, you know, emotionally, spiritually, physically, all of that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, I agree with that for sure. And people that do that are, they're a minority, in my opinion now, especially, well.
Well, it's just like going on airplanes. Everybody used to get dressed up, wear suits. Now, I don't know if you've flown lately, but it's a shit show.
Oh, yeah.
People just are absolutely rude, and not everybody, I should say. I'm generalizing, but you do get into that whole area where you wonder how people got the money for the plane tickets.
Oh, yeah.
You know, just by the vibe and the way that they're presenting themselves.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Sometimes when you dress up, it is fun to dress up, and you almost take on like the character of that, the role of how you're dressing, in a sense. So if you dress the same way all the time, you're on this same continuum. But if you occasionally go out and you dress what you would think would be nice or appropriate, which is all different for everybody,
right?
But then you kind of take that more of that air, you know, and it becomes more, it personifies you.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
From the inside and the outside. It's just different ways. I'd like to go back to what you were saying about how you really hadn't done anything physical until you started at that one point.
Right.
I think that's really what everybody gets into, is they have to get on the journey to get deeper into the mental aspect of physically working out. And I think that that's, everybody has to start somewhere, whether it's for looks, whether it's for, you know, the girl who's going by or the guy who's going by. You have to get on the path so that you can move further along and see that the layers, like peel it like an onion and see what's deeper, a deeper dimension of it.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Definitely.
Yeah, you're right. I mean, it's you know, whatever brings you to it, you know, that's great. But I think eventually it transforms and becomes more real in stuff that's more genuinely fulfilling rather than just feeding ego, you know, because that only lasts so long. And
feels so good.
Yeah. I'm the best.
And I know for me that's changed my workouts too, and the way that I approach workouts, because I started out basically lifting weights like a bodybuilder. Mm-hmm. Because it was a direct translation. It's like, okay, do this curl, this bicep gets bigger. But then I started to realize, like, okay, yeah, I can make these modifications to my body and that's cool, but I like to feel the physical strength, the increase of physical strength, and the reward of increasing, you know, how much weight you're lifting, not just in those, you know, technical structured lifts, but the kind of non-traditional strength or awkward strength too. Mm. You know, one of the things that was a turning point for me was I spent a year, you know, lifting weights, doing just your typical curls, bench, stuff like that. And then I was up at my camp with my family and I was helping move a boat lift for one of the neighbors at the camp, next camp over. And I went to pick up and I'm with all, you know, three guys that they're bigger than me, but they're not in as good a shape. You know, they hadn't been working out as hard as I had for that year. And they all seemed to lift it with ease. And mm-hmm. they were guys that probably did more physical work. I'm an IT guy, so I get no fucking physical exercise aside from my workouts. And it's like, okay, well, these look kind of cool, but what the hell do they do?
Right.
And that's when I started getting into, you know, more of the high intensity stuff and the, you know, strength building and endurance.
Yeah, I just switched to like powerlifting, barbell stuff earlier on this year. Like I started with bodybuilding from the time I was like 14 to 25. Then I found jiu-jitsu and I completely stopped lifting at all. Actually, I went from like 227 down to 168 pounds from jiu-jitsu.
Wow.
And then I built it back up because I added some strength back because there's a lot of big guys at the gym and I didn't feel like it anymore. So it's like, well, yeah, powerlifting's fun, like with a barbell compared to like the, you know, I'm trying to get my delts to look big, you know, it's nice.
I have kind of the opposite story of I was about 19 years old and I was working, doing it. Floor. So I was wheeling concrete for concrete floor, and one of the other laborers was there, and he was huge. I mean, this guy was jacked. His arms were the size of my thighs, and he could not wheel the concrete. It was like in rock and stuff, and he would just dump it over. And I was a scrawny kid, 155 pounds, 19, and just was able to like maneuver it just because that's the type of stuff I had done. He'd gotten so into what he was doing, not for doing it, something like jiu-jitsu or using it for that strength for throughout your life, really. That's what you don't. I mean, yes, you look pretty. It's all good. You know, everybody wants a nice yoga butt and big biceps and everything. But in really, you want it to enhance all aspects of your life. I mean, that's really what anything that I do exercise-wise or what I'm trying to move towards. And like I was talking about that journey, like getting on the path, that's really where I'm moving, is so that everything is incorporated and really moving me in to my dream state of where I want to go, basically.
Yeah, it's nice to have this idea of being this perfect specimen. At least keeps you moving.
Good.
You know, even if you never get there, you know, it's just an idea. It's like you can picture 10 years from now, I wanna be here, and you can picture in every aspect you want it to be better than you are now, compared to I'm gonna be 10 years older. Now it's time to slow down. It can't be that way for me personally. I know it can't be for you guys either.
Right.
So, yeah. No, you have to. I mean, once you stop learning, I mean, just dig it. Go for the dirt nappy. You know, it's not really
you have, I don't know, if you stop learning, there's really, why do you get up in the morning? So no matter if it's exercise, if it's IT, if it's learning how to play a guitar or whatever, it's at least you still want growth in your life.
Right.
And that's the important thing,
I think. Yeah.
And again, that's starting on the journey and where you're at today, there's always tomorrow and you can always progress forward, but, you know, there's half full, half empty people. So it's just what you feel is right for you.
Right.
It's really easy to get to that point, too, where every day is exactly the same. You know, I worked at a hospital in New Hampshire for 5 years, and it started to get to that point. And my wife and I were just like, yeah, we can't do this anymore. And we quit our jobs and moved here with nothing lined up in any way. So we just, no plans, nothing. It took about 3 years to finally, like, get back to square one, but it was worth it, not having a job like that. So,
wow.
Yeah.
No kidding. I didn't know that. What were you doing at the hospital?
I was a cardiology technician. I worked in the cath lab and did stress testing. Yeah. So, yep. So, I mean, I knew right when I went in that place to interview it wasn't for me. Right. And ended up staying 5 years somehow, you wow. know. So, I'm glad I did it. I know what I never want to do again.
Put that one on the list.
Yeah,
but I did have a 401k,
yeah.
Which is now gone.
Miss that a little. Yeah. Now, as far as the jiu-jitsu stuff goes, I wanted to touch on that a little bit. You know, last time we talked primarily about jiu-jitsu, but as far as combat sports go, mm-hmm. like jiu-jitsu, do you think that, you know, there's a whole concept of embrace your inner caveman, and I would imagine there are probably two schools of thought there. One is that it can help release those things, so we're not keeping them bottled inside and acting out in other ways, like being a chauvinist, you know, cheating on your significant other, mm-hmm. or, you know, starting fights at the bar, but people could also look at it as that's going to, you know, increase that, or, you know, what's the word? Encourage that.
Yeah, I mean, I started jiu-jitsu because I wanted to know how to, you know, beat somebody up, to be honest with you. It was, you know, during my weightlifting days, ego to the max, and I thought I'd go into this gym down in New Hampshire called Seacoast MMA at the time, and have my way, you know, plow through people. And there's a 150-pound blue belt that just tossed me around and choked me a bunch of times. So you have a choice at that point. Do I quit or do I come back? You know, it sucks coming back for sure.
Right.
But I did. And, yeah, I mean, you can get that aggression out, but I think it's not a – I don't think that's the best way. I mean, like, what you'd give to your peers, your teammates – isn't something that I don't think they want to feel. The vibe wouldn't be right. So I think it's more productive to get that out in a different way, personally.
Gotcha.
So, I mean, I definitely felt that way at first, for sure. You know, I'd leave like, I feel like I got my monkey out, is what I used to say.
Yeah.
And things have changed for me, which is the natural progression of jiu-jitsu. You know, like white and blue belt, some of purple, you're still going to have that, like, ego-based, I got to dominate, submit, I can't tap, that kind of thing. And that changes because you realize you want to do this for a long period of time, and you realize what jiu-jitsu really is just, it's constant learning. You're never going to be the best. If you're the best one day, you're not going to be the best the next day. It's as simple as that. So you really just got to let it go, have fun with it. If you're not having fun with it, you're going to quit. And if you bring aggression, that can only last so long, because all of a sudden you're not 25 anymore,
yeah.
And you're not angry, but you're still doing jiu-jitsu. It's
right.
Like, what does this even mean to me now? Which is a question that I've had to ask myself recently too. You know, and it feels better for me now. You know, I plan on doing it the rest of my life for fun, and if it's not fun for some reason someday, I'm done.
Yeah.
And that's it. So.
Nice.
Yep.
That's good. And yeah, it's important that there is that progression. And I can't help but draw a parallel. I'm trying to think of what the name of the documentary was. I think it was Blood and Wine.
Maynard?
Yeah. Maynard James Keenan,
yeah.
Of Tool.
My favorite Maynard of all time.
He talked about how they progressed and how they evolved musically, or at least he did.
Yep.
And he started off in the early days, you know, people kind of criticized him because, you know, currently he does a lot of really funny stuff, off the wall stuff.
Yep.
A lot of the softer stuff, A Perfect Circle was, you know, much softer and toned down. Yeah.
Pussifer, which is awesome.
Exactly, yeah. Which is all, like, you know, satirical.
Mm.
But he said that's because it was not for everybody else, it was for him, and the progression was, yeah, I started out all angsty with things to yell and scream about,
mm-hmm.
but at some point, it did its job. I was doing that for me.
He's a jiu-jitsu purple belt, you know that?
Is he really?
He's been training since 97.
No shit.
Just got his purple belt.
Wow.
You ever seen the video of him on stage? Some guy comes up on stage and he hip tosses the guy?
I haven't seen that.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, he just got his purple belt from this guy in Hawaii named Luis. I don't know his last name, but yeah, wow. It's the same progression on both ends with his music and his jiu-jitsu. So,
that's cool.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I just, as you were speaking, I was kind of drawing that parallel. And but I would say, you know, for me, one of the most important things is to, if you want to embrace it as a lifestyle, to find something that you enjoy, because I think so many people think of fitness as this necessity, and they're driven by the scare tactics, you know, the PSAs and stuff like that, saying you have to get in shape, you got to get healthy, you got to get healthier.
Right.
So they think, okay, this is this thing I know I have to do because I want to extend my life and I want to be there for my, you know, kids to graduate college at least and maybe have some grandkids, and I'd like to be around for that, so I guess I'll, you know, buy a fucking terrible treadmill and walk in my living room in front of the TV, and it's just a chore or a necessity.
Yeah.
But it's important to find something that you're passionate about, because there are so many ways. I mean, for me, it's cathartic, and I get out that physical energy. I have to. It's a necessity for me. If I'm bottled up for too long, I'm actually an introvert, so in big social situations, I went out around Christmas time to kind of this like bar hopping thing with my girlfriend, and after like a couple of places of being surrounded by people, I had to go back to the hotel
drained,
and say,
right?
Hey, I'm out. I got to go do my thing.
Yep.
I went to the hotel. Nobody was there. I did a little workout regimen there, and it centered me. And, you know, that's what I get from it. And everybody can get that benefit, but, you know, you just got to find the things. I tried all kinds of different shit at first.
Yeah.
You know, ice skating, I found that was fun.
Mm-hmm.
Hiking, you know, things that have a reward.
You
get to the end of a hike and it's like, wow, I get rewarded with this beautiful view.
Mm-hmm.
Even
it's
though
called
the
get off the couch,
yeah,
that, like
exactly.
experience doing
exactly.
a bunch of different things.
Netflix not that great.
No, really not. I did away with TV. That TV just sits there doing nothing. There's
there
literally
you go.
Nothing hooked up to it, and I really don't miss it at all. You know, I'd rather go out and enjoy a view, and people are blown away. You know, because I'm in the IT field and they talk to me and they want to talk about computer gaming or the latest technology. And it's like, I don't know any of this shit.
Yeah.
Like, when I'm off the clock, I'm outside. Like, I'm doing things. I'm enjoying life. I'm not sitting on a laptop for hours after sitting on a laptop for hours, you know. But, yeah, I think, you know, we pretty much covered the health and fitness stuff, or at least the physical health and fitness stuff. And maybe we can touch on the soul part of it. Spirituality, meditation, religion, philosophy, whatever you want. You just reminded me of something. Before we jump into the mind and soul part of it, diet is obviously an important thing. And for me, the physical activity came before the diet part. Once I started working out, I started to realize, you know, geez, maybe I quit smoking before I started working out, but you know, once I started working out, I noticed certain workouts, I would feel like shit, and I didn't like that.
Yep.
But I'd notice if I ate differently before the workout, I felt better.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's about, let's see, I'd say I have 14 years, like, in the fitness field now. And in my opinion, what we're told to eat is the exact opposite of what we should eat. Fats are actually good for you, including saturated fats. Monounsaturated fats and poly are also good for you. Coconut oil, avocado, saturated fats from grass-fed butter, even bacon, as long as it's a healthy pig.
Ooh,
those
like
are all
that.
Good for you.
Who doesn't like bacon?
Right.
Yeah, I'm on board so far.
So yeah, high fat will optimize your hormones. All right. So for guys, testosterone. If you have a low-fat diet, your testosterone is going to be low. You're going to feel like crap. Cholesterol also isn't a big deal. Cholesterol actually converts to testosterone in the body. So I'm going to go out on a whim here, but it sounds like the diet that was created for us was designed to keep us weak and powerless, in my opinion. Grains have a hugely negative effect on you. I don't know, you know, you can go down the whole gluten bandwagon, but, you know, wheat in general causes inflammation in the body, causes your digestive system to slow down, kills the gut bacteria for digestion. All of a sudden, you have a gut full of shit, and you're feeling awful and poisoned all the time. So, honestly, it is completely backwards in every way. And also, carbs in general. So, as an example, as guys especially, you want to keep growth hormone and testosterone optimized as much as you can throughout your life. This is the reason why there's so many people on testosterone replacement therapy, and they have erectile dysfunction. Is because what carbs do, when you eat carbs, especially first thing in the morning, is when your growth hormone and testosterone are at the highest, eating carbs increases your insulin. Insulin's going to absorb your carbs into your muscle cells. When insulin goes up, testosterone and growth hormone go down. And for the rest of the day, you're playing catch-up. Insulin goes up, sucks all the blood, all the sugar out of your blood, goes into your cells, blood sugar drops, feel like crap, you're tired. Have some more carbs, up. Down, up, down, all day. And that's why, you know, around 11 o'clock, noontime, you start to feel like crap. That's why caffeine and stimulants are so popular.
Yep.
All right. So I could go on about this for a long time, but I'm just telling you right now, it's backwards completely.
Gotcha. Yeah.
So, I mean, where you could find information about this is the Bulletproof Diet, Carb Backloading Diet. These are things you might just want to research on the internet if you're interested in hearing more about this. More and more studies are showing this is the way we should be eating. Humans are designed more for fats and proteins than carbs. If you're going to eat carbs, preferably after a workout to replenish what you burnt, and that's about it. Because when you work out, your muscle cells actually open up. So if you have a hard, like, powerlifting session, let's say your muscle cells open up. So when you eat your carbs, you don't need insulin in order to absorb the blood sugar. So you never had to drop your growth hormone or your testosterone for that to happen. So I can keep going if you want, but wow. I mean, this is...
Wow, that's cool.
So yeah, this is something I'm like pretty passionate about because I see people just doing it wrong.
Right.
You know, this is, for me, this is 5 years of experimentation with understanding. First thing I ever did was put coconut oil in my coffee about 5 years ago because I read some obscure website that said it's good for you. And everyone's like, what the hell are you doing? And then it's put butter and coconut oil in your coffee. And everyone's like, what the hell are you doing? Guess what they serve now at coffee shops?
That's a big deal, yeah.
Yeah.
I will warn you, the first few days be close to the loo.
Yeah, so coconut oil has that effect.
So you've done that too, John, the coconut oil in the coffee?
Yes, I would, every morning. I was a vegetarian from the time from 19 to 39. And
oh,
then,
sorry.
Yeah, it's not a healthy vegetarian. I mean,
whoopie pies.
Cheese, lacto, oh, wow. Udo, yeah, whoopie pies, all processed soy,
oh,
stuff like that. And then... I taught yoga, did stuff like that, and then I started doing jujitsu, and met Nick, and we just started talking about diet and the way you feel, and I was a little doughy.
Right. I was going to say, plus, when you stand next to Nick, you can't help but absorb testosterone.
So it's well, like, I have a patch when I'm away from him.
Yeah. For people listening that haven't seen Nick, he's pretty fucking jacked. He's in good shape. So when he's giving this advice and when he's talking about these things, this is not just formal education or knowledge or something he read off the internet. This is through experience.
Yeah. Experimentation, right?
Oh, a lot of it, yeah.
Tinkering.
I've tried every diet. I even did vegan raw diet just to see what it was like for like 2 months.
Oh, wow.
I hated it, but I just wanted to see like, oh, everyone's raving about this. Let's see what happens. Oh, wait, I turned gray and I have no energy. I think I'll stop this one.
Yeah.
So, I mean, but, yeah, you know, you can't say anything bad about it until you try it, you know.
Right.
So
do you
yeah.
do a lot of local organic, I take it?
I mean, my wife works at John Edwards, so that's about as close as we can get in that sense. So any meat we have is usually, you know, good stuff.
Yeah.
And, yeah, like I don't – if I'm going to have milk, it's going to be like kefir from Tide Mill Farm. I don't like just milk in a jug, stuff like that. And
right.
Try to stay away from hard cheese just because I'm allergic to it. That's the only reason. Gotcha. I don't think there's anything wrong with it necessarily. Stay away from wheat, beans. It's mostly like meat, fruit, vegetables, rice. And that's about it, really. Yeah, and like light dairy, like butter. I said I there's no problem. I have no problem with that.
Right.
So, yeah.
See, I discovered, well, I didn't discover, I just overnight became lactose intolerant, which is apparently how it happens or can happen later on in life. I think I hit like maybe 27, 28 or something like that, and boom, all of a sudden just it was bad.
Mm-hmm.
So I try to keep that to a minimum. But aside from that, I've started to tinker and do experimentation too, and I'm going to sound like some out there fucking weird hippie, but
it's
like I can hear if I quiet my mind, man, I can hear my body. And it's true, though.
It tells
like,
you what you should consume.
I used to get all these cravings, and I think everybody does. And again, it can be from other things too, you know, emotional, spiritual voids. But for the most part, when I'm craving food, my body needs something, and typically I would just act compulsively, and it's like, oh, I must be hungry, so I'll just eat whatever's in front of me, or I'll grab whatever I think tastes good at the time.
Yeah.
But if I stop and think, you know, or listen to my body, I can usually tell what I'm lacking, and I've experimented with that and been able to tell, you know, if I eat, say, protein, you know, like steak or, you know, hamburger for lunch, steak for dinner, my body will literally be craving some kind of greens, something else.
Yep.
You know, I can feel it because I've fine-tuned my body now through health and fitness. And I used to just feel like shit all the time.
Right.
When you're drinking Mountain Dew and eating all frozen meals, just shit is the norm. That's your baseline, is feeling like shit. You don't know why or what exactly it is. It's just everything. But now that I've fine-tuned things, when I eat something, I know it when it's wrong, you know.
Yeah, our primal self wants to consume as much calories as we can for survival. So you have to overcome that in order to start eating well. Because otherwise, you're going to eat the donut. You're going to eat the cheesecake. You're going to eat the ice cream.
Yes, sir.
Your body wants it. Like, right. It craves that. It's like, just instead of pint of Ben and Jerry's, 1,500 calories, I can survive two more nights in the cold. You know? So you have to overcome that.
Yeah. All right. So as far as the soul goes, or spirituality, meditation, religion, philosophy, do either of you subscribe to any particular ideology?
You want to go first, John?
Yeah,
I have no particular religion per se. You know, I was raised Christian. Started questioning that. No joke. After reading the Da Vinci Code, it was that late before I started even questioning it. And then there was a long period of being an atheist, or at least telling myself I was. I was definitely unhappy during that time period, looking back. And just recently, I'd say, 4 years ago, I was in the hospital for 31 days with a stomach issue. I got down to like 148 pounds or something like that. And some stuff happened that I was like, okay, there's got to be something else. You know, I thought I would die. My body knew I was going to die. The doctor said that's not the case, but try telling your own body that. You know, it doesn't believe it. You know, your own body doesn't care about modern medicine, what the doctors are saying. It knows when it's time to shut off, and I was right there. And I got to the point where I was like, I'm okay to die. I honestly was not the slightest bit scared at all. I even said to my wife, I was like, don't worry, I'm not scared about it. Because I was, for like 3 weeks before that, by the end of the fourth week or whatever, of being in the hospital, I was just like, it's all good, you know, I'm not scared. And
it's
then
a cool place to be.
Yeah,
to
man.
Actually,
it's like
that,
that's one of those things I hope I never like forget. You know, it changed everything. I was definitely fear based before that, a lot. You know, I mean, it's still there, obviously, but
no, we're human.
Yeah, when you when you get rid of that feeling of like, oh, I need to survive. Oh my God, what's going to happen to me? When that goes away, at least even a little bit of it, things change quite a bit.
Right.
And that's when I got out of the hospital. I was like, fuck this, we're moving back to Maine, I don't even know what we're going to do, because there was no, it wasn't scary anymore, you know what I mean? And so after that, like, I kind of got back into praying here and there to whatever it might be, you know. I know there's something else. I think we have guides in a way. Some, you know, some religions will call them angels. You know, I know they're there. I mean, I don't have proof, but when you quiet your mind, you can hear advice from them.
Yeah.
So it's about as far as my religion goes, you know. So, and I know it could be your own subconscious mind that you're hearing, but sometimes it's just too deep and too direct for it to be that, in my opinion. So, but you have to be at the absolute stillest point, you know.
That's where meditation comes.
Exactly.
Going outside, being in a quiet area, shutting everything off, unplugging. I think that's so important. Not that we were talking about just getting off the couch before. Go out. Go outside. Go for a walk. Go someplace where you're not going to be bothered, and your mind can slow down, and you'll hear yourself better, and you'll hear your true essence. Mm-hmm. You know, you'll be able to get into your seat then.
Oh yeah,
I think it's more important. It's an important thing to do.
Yeah, definitely. And it's like for a while I'd say that's my own subconscious talking. And then I believe in ghosts and things like that. So why wouldn't I believe that it's maybe something else giving me advice?
Right.
But that's as far as I can say, you know what I mean? Like, I do have a science part of me that likes the proof part.
Yeah.
But I have to let that go a little bit, or else the rest of my life is going to be pretty damn boring, thinking there's nothing else beyond what we're beyond this. This gets boring.
Right. Yeah. I agree. I mean, I have that same. I haven't really identified a higher power. I believe there is something, mm-hmm. and I've seen enough evidence in my life that there is.
Right.
I too have that scientific part of me that wants to see proof of everything. But the problem with science is, for every answer, it just raises a different question.
Yeah.
So to all the people that say, "Oh, well, blah blah blah, the Big Bang," it's like, okay, but you know, where did that come from? Mm-hmm. You know, where did that come from? Where did that come from?
Right.
And you can keep breaking it down, and it essentially gets back to the same question of some sort of creation, or the concept of just infinite existence, where just everything has always been. You know, the universe is infinite. Everything's infinite. It's always been. It always will be. And to me, it's like, okay, you can grasp that concept, the concept of just everything being infinite, always being here, always will be, but yet something creating, some sort of creation, you know, is far-fetched.
Oh, yeah.
You know, and I think
agree.
It's kind of small-minded of us to really subscribe too much to either one of those ideologies.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it seems like science is, without them wanting to admit it seems, they're starting to prove what's been around in the West, or the East, I'm sorry, for 5,000 years.
Yeah, for a long time.
You know, it's coming back around, and right. It's almost like they're proving the things that the Chinese used to say, or India, you know. Yeah. I don't have any specific examples, so I'm just talking shit right now. But I think I read it somewhere.
Yeah, sounds right.
Yeah. You have to look at it like the medical industry. It's all about making money here. So we're talking about spirituality, but in the grander scheme of things, when you are doing these good things for you, when you start your path, when you start to exercise, then it moves towards food, and then it gets a little bit deeper. You get into that other layer of the onion, and you really start to see where what makes you happy. I mean, we're taught from so many different influences, from your parents to the people that you hang out with, to social media, to TV, and you're constantly bombarded. And if you don't quiet yourself down and really sit in your seat, be present, which it's super hard. It's so much easier to sit on the couch, watch Netflix, and eat whoopie pies all night.
Oh, yeah.
And I've done it, you know. It's super easy to do. But if you really want to do the work, it opens up and your life really changes. It's like you can't go back anymore to that point of just sticking your head in the sand, which if that's where you want to be, there's no judgment there. But once you start on this path of wanting to be a better you, you're going to go down some strange roads that you never even thought you were seeing.
Oh yeah, the rabbit hole, right?
So, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I know. For me, I find that I've studied a lot of organized religions, and it's almost a hobby of mine. And you know, my problem with a lot of organized religions—not all, but most—and especially a lot of Christianity. And again, it's like anything else. It, in and of itself, it's not a bad thing, but it can be used for evil. But for me personally, when I look at a lot of organized religion and the way that it's approached, I see it as giving up. Because, like we've talked about, I'm all about self-improvement,
yeah.
You know, finding out more about myself, about the universe, constantly, you know, looking for answers. And I see organized religion as just settling. Like, okay, mm-hmm. this book's got all the answers. I'll call that good.
Yep.
Well, what about this little part? What about that? I don't know. Jesus. That, you know, doesn't matter what the question is.
Yeah,
Jesus,
yeah.
Just stop asking questions. Whereas, you know, kind of opening your mind to the universe,
yeah.
You know, you can explore all these things, but you can continue to ask questions. And Buddhism is one religion that I can appreciate.
Mm-hmm.
Aside from some of the mysticism, because they have some of that stuff too. You know, a lot of people don't realize there's a lot of that, you know, belief in divinity and, you know, divine beings and stuff like that. That's a little on the hokey side for me.
Mm-hmm.
But the Buddha reincarnated.
Right.
Yes.
Exactly. Yeah. And, you know, basically if you're bad or you act bad in this lifetime, next lifetime, you can come back as an animal. It's like, but the general philosophy mm-hmm. is, you know, trying to do better and asking more questions and exploring more,
right.
Rather than, you know, in most forms of Christianity, saying just stop asking questions. In Buddhism, it's more like, hey, ask more questions. You know, figure this out.
Yeah,
Buddha was this way. He was divine. You can be too. In Christianity, they never say you can be just as divine as Jesus was.
Well, I think it could have gone down that road. It got messed up along the way.
It got dogmatic.
Yeah, yeah.
It's like when religion and spirituality, there's dogma comes into it,
mm-hmm.
then it's just another human being trying to manipulate other human beings. And
right.
It turns into a power thing. It turns into, it's all about the green.
Yeah, and that's where meditation, too, is like, how do you know who you are? If all you do is feed yourself with other people's ideas, you know, it's like, I like when people say to me a quote that they heard, it's like, do you believe that? Or you heard it from someone else? Oh, I heard it from somebody else. Is that you that's telling me that? I mean, like, I don't think it is.
Right.
Like, that quote might evaporate. Take 1 month and meditate. That quote might mean nothing to you anymore. You know, so it's like we're constantly absorbing all these things around us, creating this puzzle of who we are, when I don't think it is who we are at all. You know, I think we're, I don't know what. I mean, that's what I'm looking for, right. You know.
Yeah.
So.
Well, you're also taught, I also grew up Roman Catholic, so Christian, and you're taught that you should only be looking towards the light in life. And I don't know, the farther I get along the path, I realize that you are dark and light. And mm-hmm. if you do not accept who you are truly, you're always going to be a facade of what you really are. And I'm not saying that you go out and, you know, hurt other people or do something detrimental to anybody. I'm just saying that you have to understand that you're human. You have this light, you have this dark. It's like yin and yang. It's the same thing. And those, you're a culmination of everything. And the more in depth you get, the more that you meditate, the closer you can get to really that line in yourself where you see that it's just everything is fluctuating.
Mm-hmm. I think what that is our animal. I feel like meditation, it unpacks a suitcase of all the crap we've been fed and just brings us back to the state of the animal.
Get the, I mean, the oneness.
Yeah, yeah.
We all are.
You watch nature, you know, they're not, when a coyote goes and kills a rabbit, he's not thinking, oh, I'm being evil right now.
Yes.
You know?
Yeah,
but
yeah.
That could be seen as dark. You know, but I think that's what it brings us back to, is like everyone thinks it's some mysticism to get to this point of enlightenment. I think enlightenment is just bringing us back to the animal state of what we actually are, being in our environment, being in the moment. You know, everyone says, let's get to the moment. You have to be in the moment. All animals are in the moment. You see them all the time. They're alert constantly, okay?
Right. Wait, we're not their phone?
Yeah, no. Yeah. Not walking with their heads on the ground, you know? I mean,
all the hyenas eating the gazelle, or they're like, oh, did you see what Sally said?
Right. Checking Facebook. So, I think that's all it is. I mean, once again, just my personal opinion on it, you know? I mean,
it's what resonates for you.
Yeah, getting to a place of being in the moment is what you see everything else in nature besides, I don't know what happened to humans, but we're not, you know? Right. The rest of the animal kingdom seems to be there. They're alert in the moment at the time. They're not thinking all the time. The whales aren't thinking, oh, no, a great white shark might be up there. I don't know if we should go over there or not, you know?
Right.
Oh, they might be. I don't fucking know.
Oh, I don't know. I don't know if we should go over there.
That's exactly how I imagine them sounding in my head. If you give them a human voice.
There's a great white shark.
Yeah, it's funny though. You're right. It seems that the more civilized, quote unquote civilized, we become as a society,
yeah,
the more civilized we try to be, the less civilized we actually
yeah,
are.
Yeah, that's it.
And you're right. It's trying hard. We're trying too hard.
Mm-hmm.
You know, rather than going back to some of those instincts and some of those basics.
Yeah.
That are fulfilling, because I think our instincts can just run wild, and mm-hmm. you can take off to the extreme, and that's what you see with people that are really greedy. You know, the people on Wall Street that are
perfect example.
You know, ripping off tons of people to become billionaires. You know, not that everybody on Wall Street's doing that, but
right.
something like Enron. Like, those people just have natural instincts gone awry, just
yeah.
taken to the extreme of hoarding. You know, this is my shelter. I need more shelter. Mm-hmm. I need more shelter. I need to consume more things. I need more nourishment.
Yeah,
and it's just all consuming and perpetual,
yeah.
which is ironic because it brings it back to ego and why you started working out, right? That's just ego inflated completely. Whenever you need to take something to gain power over somebody else, whether it's like lifting weights to look good, or like Nick mm-hmm. was saying, to like beat somebody up to do jiu-jitsu,
yeah.
until you start to open up and see things a little bit, you're not so myopic, so you're looking at things at many different degrees, and that's following the path. That's when you can start to make those little switches. And maybe for some people, working at Enron is the end-all and be-all. I mean, it takes all kinds to go around, and I mean, it's not for me, but
right.
If that's what you want to do, there's always going to be people like that. There's just all different types of people, so
mm-hmm.
right.
it's hard telling.
Yeah, and I mean, that's kind of the third part of that trifecta is the mind, which I think is a necessity, and it's one that obviously can bring some really negative consequences if you get too sucked into ego and too mm-hmm. focused on ego. But you know, our minds need to be stimulated, not to mention, you know, as much as I hate to focus on material things, money, career, stuff like that, it is important, because if I want the other two, I need that in place, because mm-hmm. there's no way that I'm going to just meditate my problems away if I can't pay my light bill.
Right.
Now, that's where in yoga there's a sect called Tantra, and that's basically, you know, in the Western we all think Tantra is sex, and there's a delineated form of that, like sexual Tantra, but Tantra is about being a householder. The older school thought basically was that you could just sit and meditate, and anybody can become enlightened sitting in a cave somewhere with nothing distracting them. But we're householders. We need to have, you know, things. If you're going to have families, you need to have, you know, it's nice, or you don't need to, but it's nice to have a bathroom. It's nice to, you need shelter, you need heat. So you have to work all these things into your life. And in this society, you can't just totally go away from it if you're going to be part of society. If you want to go move out and go do your thing, but you're still going to need to have to interact. You're going to need help at some point, so you have to really bring it all back down again and realize that, I don't know, I don't think in this day and age you can really just meditate your problems away.
I agree.
It's,
and also, I mean, the mind's not going to be healthy if you're not eating the right food to even start meditation,
right,
for that matter. So, you know, yeah, it's this full circle.
And now you hear stories of, you know, Tibetan monks or whatever, you know, certain people or gurus, Hindi, you know, whatever, that walk the desert for 10 years, you know, eating nothing but, you know, like one mushroom per day and three drops of water, whatever you barely need to survive, and meditating to the point where their fingernails curl around into their hands and are growing in their hands.
Yeah.
And it's like, okay, clearly they're not healthy physically, and
they obviously never had to pump their own gas.
Fair enough. That's a good point. Yeah, and it's, and financially they're obviously not stable. They're not providing for their family. They're not, you know, that's another example of what you can do, you know, physically, where you can kind of go down that road without paying attention to the other things and throw yourself off balance, and it can be that way with anything.
Mm-hmm.
You know, now when you talk about meditation, you know, a lot of people may not have experience with meditation, and I know I've got some experiences I could share what it means to me, but what does meditation mean to you, or how do you go about meditating?
Yeah, I do breath work for meditation. So breath is the quickest thing that can make me aware of myself. All right. When I focus on my breathing, my mind stops talking. And then when the mind stops talking, it's only a matter of time before you start to uncover the truth. The mind, in my opinion, that voice that's in everybody's head, is lying to us pretty much all the time. It's pretty creepy if you think about it, that there's something lying to us constantly about pretty much every aspect of our life.
It's always grasping for the external,
yeah,
for the most part.
Oh yeah,
like
absolutely.
The fed part of it.
Yeah, yeah. And, you know, my goal is to stop that from talking. If I can keep that at bay through focusing on my breathing, then there comes a time when, I don't know, I just feel vast and open after a certain amount of time.
I like that.
You know, and when that happens, you caught a glimpse of what you could always feel, and then you can never go back to what you were. Just getting that one glimpse, good luck stopping it. You can't, because you can realize, wait, could life actually feel this way all the time? Maybe not, but I'd like it a little bit more than it is now, you know.
Yeah.
So, that's what it is to me. I mean,
I'm lucky. I, for the most part, I meditate with a mantra. Kind of started, I was in Costa Rica on a yoga retreat, and so that was probably about 5 years ago, and just started with a mantra. Kind of was taught a little, you know, two-syllable word, and then every time that my mind would veer off, just kind of coax it back into that center line. And it's not about grasping, it's about letting it happen naturally. And it's taken me this time to really see that you can't, every time I get in the space, and believe me, if I meditate for 25 minutes, I'm lucky if I'm there for a minute or two. But I'm seated. It's not that it's unenjoyable. It is enjoyable, but that vastness that Nick was talking about, if I get those 2 minutes of that feeling, just the oneness of we're all the same, everything is there, everything else drops away, to me, it's just such a calming feeling to know that that is there. And it's so hard, and it's fleeting, but anything, I'm that old school way of thinking, anything really good, it's going to take some hard work. Right. You know, and whether that hard work is sitting there and enduring the pain of sitting there and not being able to let your mind slow down,
mm-hmm.
then that's what it is.
Yeah, speaking of enduring the pain, if you put a timer on how long you have to meditate, you have to endure the pain. You know, especially when you first start meditating, if you say to yourself, I'm just going to do this for 10 minutes a day, that might be really difficult, just that 10 minutes.
It's going to be.
Yeah, yeah, it's tough. Because when you hear what you're saying to yourself in your mind, and you realize that it's not you anymore, it's pretty fucked up.
Everything in your being is going to want you to get up and do something to distract yourself from being present.
Mm-hmm.
It's amazing. It's actually really cool to realize that.
Yeah.
How many voices are really going on in our head?
Oh yeah, there's more than one. Yeah, yeah. Oh, well, and I mean, and that's everybody. You know, it's not just schizophrenics. You know,
they're only sociopaths.
Yes. I went to what was it called? Zendo Bay meditation, Buddhist meditation place in Surrey a couple months ago, and they have a 45. It's 45 minutes, I think, that you sit, and then everyone else is sitting, so you feel like I probably should too. So
you didn't do it in the plank position.
Yeah, yeah. So after about like 30 minutes of just mind racing and everything, it's just like it all of a sudden it stops having a hold on you because it realizes, oh, this guy's not reacting to what we're saying. Does this make any sense?
Yeah.
And so it just stops. It stops giving you shit, and then you're silent. And then the bell rang, and it was over.
Yeah.
But I, you know, you just get to that point then, you know, and they're like, oh wait, I can be here. Just will take some work, take some time. Breathing meditation is way faster for me because when I'm focused on breathing, the mind's not saying anything. No. And that's why it works best for me compared to just stillness.
Yes.
I haven't even tried mantra. That sounds cool. Yeah.
Yeah.
So.
Well, and there's other, you know, like concentration meditation.
Yeah.
Where you concentrate on like a candle flickering, you know, you stare at it, you're very rigid. I set myself up against a wall, put a pillow behind my back, sit on the floor, and sit there for a period of time. To me, it's like I need to relax to be able to let go. I also have that go. So if I was trying to like super concentrate, maybe at one point I will need that in my life, but I feel like that would just aggravate me more than bring me more internal.
Right.
Where my true essence, I feel like, is coming from.
I have to be in like half lotus position with a straight spine. The way the energy moves when the spine is straight.
Yes.
Compared to any curve or even relaxation, like on a couch or a chair.
Yeah.
When the spine is straight, there's some connection that when the energy moves, everything just works a lot better.
Yeah, that's so. I put a pillow on my low back, but I've noticed that just tilting my head a few degrees will make a huge difference in energy level and how much easier it is sometimes. If my head is down a little bit more, I definitely, the voices are a little bit, it's almost like your posture.
Oh, yeah,
and we've talked about this
before. When your shoulders are here and your head's down, your mind's active.
Your mind is active. And
When you're, you know, whatever you want to call it, open heart or whatever, now you're in the world again.
Yep.
Yeah. Yeah. And so for me, like breathing up the spine's important. So if I have a curve in my low back and my neck, it doesn't breathe up the spine. I have to flex here and come in with a chin.
Pull your abs back,
Be
able to back.
Yeah, I mean, that took a while to figure out, but once you realize it's
cool. But see, that's the thing, too, with, like, I would say it's not daunting, you know? It's not that big of a deal. Try it for 5 minutes.
Yeah.
See if you can sit there. And big deal, if you can't, it's not that big of a deal. But if you catch that little glimpse, it makes it all worth it.
Yeah.
That's all I can say.
If you catch that glimpse, then you're down the rabbit hole.
Exactly.
And then you never stop because you can't.
Yeah. Yeah. See, this is cool for me because I've been meditating probably mostly for the past year.
Cool.
You know, at least like deeply meditating. And my first experience with meditation was completely reactive. It was out of necessity. I was experiencing high levels of anxiety and fear, especially at night when I tried to go to sleep at night. I'd lay my head on the pillow and boom, my mind would just start racing. And that would translate into physical anxiety. And I'd have anxiety attacks. And, you know, the approach to that, to really resolve it, was twofold. You know, I had to make changes in my life. I had to do work on myself so that I could get rid of a lot of insecurities and things that were causing those feelings. Because when I laid down at night, I would scrutinize pretty much every interaction I had during the day.
Mm-hmm.
For one, I had to stop doing that, at least to that level, and get to a point where it's like, okay, I can realistically look at my day, you know, what I did, and how I treated others. Once I do that realistically, it's just a huge weight was lifted from me, and it made it so much easier, because then I can look at, okay, I did mistreat this person today, or I could have approached this situation differently. And that's okay. That's mm-hmm. that's not, that doesn't raise fear or anxiety. That's just consciousness. That's just an awareness of self. And that was such a relief. But until then, I kind of had to treat it almost like, you know, say you have migraines or any physical condition, you just want to get rid of it. I need to get rid of this right now. So right. until I did the work on myself to find out how to relieve that, my temporary fix was guided sleep meditations at night. And that was my introduction to meditation, which, you know, is more of a, not so much of a meditation as just relaxation. And it was a focus thing, you know, and I'd recommend it to anybody that's experiencing trouble with sleep, especially if it's coming from anxiety, mind racing, things like that. You can find these guided sleep meditations on YouTube. Bring it up and listen, and it has you do certain things, flex certain parts of your body, release, focus on your breathing.
Yeah.
Some will do, you know, kind of mild, guided, you know, visual stuff, you know, envisioning certain places and, you know, some of that stuff. And that got me somewhat interested so that, you know, once it got beyond that, I was like, okay, there's something to this, and I think I can benefit more from it. And then I started meditating more consciously, not just, you know, because obviously you don't get as much out of it when you're doing it just to fall asleep. You just eventually you fall asleep, and it's like, I don't remember exactly when I fell asleep or why. I just experienced some relief at some point, obviously.
Mm-hmm. Which is sweet in itself.
It yeah. is. It's nice. But then to do it, you know, intentionally when you have no reason, rather than as a reaction to,
yeah.
oh my God, I'm freaking out because I'm stressed out at work, I better meditate. But when everything is completely okay,
mm-hmm.
and you meditate to find something within yourself, that you may not even know is there, that's when it gets interesting, or it has for me.
Yeah, once you get that first layer out of the way, then you can really start digging deeper. And the easy route would be to take an anti-anxiety pill the second you feel that.
I was going to say, Pfizer's knocking yeah. on your door. Yeah. Like, well, I can meditate.
Lorazepam for you. Yeah. You know, it's like, you'd never even take step one, because that was way easier.
Right.
You know, but not long lasting, that's for sure.
Yeah. And you know, it's been interesting because, you know, my understanding and definition of meditation has changed too, because I always pictured it as, you know, just sitting in the, you know, half lotus position and saying om and clearing mm-hmm. your mind and just kind of escaping and going into nothingness. But I found that rather than as an escape from reality, you can use it, or I can use it, to treat reality.
Yep.
And I always thought that it was made to just push all thoughts and feelings away from yourself, which that's kind of like the palate cleanser. That's a good baseline to start at with a blank slate. But eventually things can come in, and I realize rather than pushing these things away, I need to embrace them and bring them in. And mm-hmm. once I can calm all of my other senses and get in the right place, I can process things a lot better, and I can invite whatever insecurity or fear or, you know, a problem I have with another individual, I can allow that in and say, okay, I'm going to embrace this right now.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to feel it fully and hold on to it until it's gone,
yeah.
rather than just constantly trying to push stuff away.
Yeah, like a knee-jerk reaction to something that you have, like that stimuli or that person that you have a problem with, you're actually able to look at it, flip it around, embrace the feeling that you're having, versus we're taught to push away all these feelings and then move on to the next thing, sit there, delve into it, and you know, turn it around and look at it from a different angle. You know, if 4 out of 5 times things are happening to you, it's usually there's a common denominator. It's your ass.
You know? Exactly.
Yeah. So, yeah. I mean, I don't know.
Why is everyone an asshole to me?
It's actually, I wish Eric was here for this part, because spirituality is something that he gets into, and he's, you know, taught me quite a few things about spirituality. And, you know, one is, you know, you guys have kind of alluded to it and have a similar philosophy, I think, that, you know, deep down we are whatever perfect, you know, what I see is our soul, which is pure, it's loving, it's free of insecurities, it's free of judgment of others and all this negative shit. And I think, you know, that's who we are when we're born. And then as we experience things are done to us, we interact with people around us, that builds these layers around it, you know, layers of an onion, if you will.
Yeah.
And you know, you can get to a point where you're peeling back down to that pure part of you that's a child that will act just simply out of joy, to have fun, you know, enjoy something simple outdoors, or to act just out of love. You see little kids do it all the time, just run up and hug somebody else on the playground.
They never even met. They have, there's no fear of
it's of rejection.
Being open. Yeah, the heart is open, and we learn to close it.
Well, we hold those things actually in ourselves. Like, a lot of muscle pain isn't due to improper biomechanics. It's due to a held emotion.
I totally believe
that. Oh, yeah, 100%. Yeah. It's like, okay, my hip hurts. What happened when you were 6 years old? Oh, you figured it out. My hip's better. A lot of times, like, during deep meditation, an image or a memory will pop in your mind that you completely forgot about. You know, like when you were really young, and all of a sudden, oh, I've been storing that in my right rib. I can breathe better now. Yeah. And you start to unpack the suitcase, you know, one thing at a time. And it's never-ending process, because every time we leave our little sanctuary of our house, if our house is a sanctuary, we're susceptible to adding more to it. There's techniques that, it's called the iron shirt. You know, it's supposed to create this barrier around you so you don't take in anyone else's bad psychic vibes, you know. I can't do it, but I've read about it. You know, it'd be cool.
Especially to try to do in traffic.
Yeah, exactly.
Downtown Ellsworth.
Exactly.
Right.
Exactly.
Yeah, there's a couple of things that I've wanted to do, too, to experiment. One is to go check out the Zendo. I've been meaning to go there because, like I said, you know, all of my experience with meditation has just been through experimentation. You know, I have no formal knowledge. I haven't really even read that much about it. I haven't talked to many other people about it.
Yeah.
And, you know, so that's something I'm interested in. That and the more of the physical part of it, I'd like to go try a sensory deprivation tank.
I love that. That'd be cool.
Which I looked into. I called a couple of places last weekend because I was in southern Maine, and they were all booked up. What are they called? The Float Place is one of them, and then Float Maine is the other. And I talked to both of the people that own those businesses, and they're similar situations. They're couples that just have it in their house, and they invite people in to come and float in their house, like in their basement or whatever. But it's more of
and they never saw you again.
That's what my girlfriend said. She's like, wait, I'm going to somebody else's basement to get in their bathtub, basically, while they're like upstairs cooking dinner.
Might want to check the Yelp reviews on that one.
But I checked them both. I did check them both out. And talked to them. They seem like great people. I wasn't able to line anything up because of the fact that they're, you know, just individuals operating out of their home, and both of them said they're often doing things on the weekend, family stuff. But it's something I'm really interested in trying because, you know, and for anybody that doesn't know, they call it a float tank or a sensory deprivation chamber, which sounds more like intimidating and
esoteric.
Medical, like some sort of, like you'd see it in an insane asylum, you know. But a float tank, I think, sounds a lot nicer. But it's
pink
basically
bunnies.
I don't know how it's even possible, but apparently, from what I read, it's you're in an enclosed capsule that's watertight, soundproof, lightproof, and it's 10 inches of water saturated with 800 pounds of Epsom salt.
Oh, wow. So you just float on it?
Which I can't even imagine. But obviously it makes you super buoyant to the point where your face and mouth aren't going under. But it relieves all of the physical tension that we probably don't even realize we carry. Because even when you're laying on a bed, you've still got gravity working against you, pushing down on you. And this deprives all the senses, you know, not to mention the sounds from outside, you know, the temperature. They set the temperature of the water to exactly the temperature of the surface of your skin. So you're literally in the most neutral position your body can possibly be in, and you're not allowed any distractions, which sounds great to me because I have ADD, and that's one of my problems when I go to try to meditate, is I have to saturate some of my senses sometimes, or I've found that that's helpful, either with music or a smell. I've tried, you know, like lavender oil on my chest. I'm sounding really manly right now. But, but I found that it helps, because otherwise, with all of my senses, you know, that it can just get so distracting. You get those outside influences that can bring back memories or just take you out of the experience.
Yeah, if the body's really gone, the mind remains, and then you really have to deal with the mind.
Yeah, beware.
Yeah. Like normal meditation, it might take an hour and a half to get to the point. As long, I mean, if you're doing it really well, for the body to melt away, so that's cool. That'd be pretty immediate.
It would be probably within a few minutes. Yeah. Like, oh shit.
Yep. Yeah. Here we go.
Just me.
Their sessions go half hour to an hour, and then if you're more experienced, 2 hours. Which
to rodeo clown level.
Yeah. Right. That scares the shit out of me to think about. One hour with myself, I don't know if I can handle that.
Right. Yeah. But I think you're ready. I can do that.
Yeah, it's I'll tell just one experience that I had. Like one of the big breakthroughs for me was I was actually laying in the office floor in there, and I just set the lighting just right so it was not offensive, but it was there. And I put on headphones, and I was listening to Incubus, Aquios Transmission, which is like kind of a really trippy song, and just the music has always kind of made me feel a certain way. So I picked that song, and I was like, I'm just going to experiment with this and kind of go with this song, go on a voyage with it, and just let it take me wherever. And I hadn't even really thought about the lyrics in the song, and maybe it was just subconscious, the way that I picked it, but, you know, I laid on the floor and listened to that song, and the music itself kind of drew me through this voyage where I was on a raft, and I was paddling, and the first words in the song are, I'm floating in a river. And I had the visuals of being on this raft before those words ever started. And it may have been that the song was just somewhere in my subconscious and knew that that was coming, but it kind of set the tone. And I let it take me down this river. And then on the banks of this river were all of the people that I know and love, there. And I felt the sunlight beating down on me. And the thing that I did or practiced as I floated down that river past everyone that I know was kind of the old adage of picturing the audience naked. I wasn't physically picturing them all naked, but I basically stripped down everyone that I interact with that's made me feel any sort of negativity. I stripped them down to their bare soul, to where they're just, you know, pure love and kindness and goodness, and reminded myself that just as I have all these layers that can cause me to hurt others, they're the exact same way. And I was able to strip them down to that raw form and see everyone that I know and love or don't love in that basic raw light. And it just made things so much easier. And it just lifted this huge weight for me of like, oh, wow. You know, once I was able to not only do that to myself, but do that to them and picture them in that way and realize that even the guy that I could peg as the biggest dirtbag that's just, you know, done terrible things, you know, robbed people and all that, I could strip them down to just, you know, I peel back all that fear and layers that have been created in them to the pure soul that they are. And that, like you said, the feeling of oneness, you know, that we're this is a brotherhood. You know, we're all in this together. You know, we're all souls, you know, just cohabitating this planet.
Oh, definitely. And,
without even knowing it, it sounds like you're doing a Buddhist loving kindness meditation, like just sending out that love. You know, first you have to bring it to yourself, and there's like four lines to it, but then you bring it out to the other people and you let that exchange happen. And it sounds like that's what you're doing without even, it's like that's what's in you internally from meditating. You already found that for yourself without even seeing it on the outside. So that's freaking awesome. Wow.
Yeah, definitely. Next month, mid-October, we're going to have meditation classes and seminars at a KBJJ.
Oh, nice.
Taught by Antoinette Caruso. She's from Georgia. She just moved up here. She's been doing it her whole life. Yeah, she's good. I mean, I've spent like an hour and a half, 2 hours with her, and I've learned a lot just in that amount of time. Nice. So, yeah.
That's cool.
That'll be cool. Yeah. Awesome. Well, keep everyone updated because, I mean, she'll be, I'd say, the best to go to learn meditation in this area.
When
she's teaching it. And then it's going to be like seminars, beginner, intermediate, advanced, and then continuing week to week, just meditation classes.
Oh, great.
So, yeah. So, cool. I'll let you know.
Yeah. And that's a good time, I think, to plug Acadia Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu.
All right.
Might as well. Out on the Bangor Road across from Card Enterprises. And you guys got a Facebook page that people can like.
Yep.
You got a website that may or may not be updated with the current time.
You might not even want to go to that one.
Just
use Facebook.
All right.
I missed my GoDaddy payment.
Oh, gotcha. All right.
It's a small town. Everyone knows where everything is. It's fine.
Facebook is where everybody does everything.
Exactly.
Anyway.
Yeah.
You know, most restaurants these days don't even have a website. They just have their Facebook
page.
Yeah,
that's kind of where we're going. Yeah. Let the website go.
But, no, some great stuff going on there, and especially the expansion of meditation. That's really cool.
Yeah, it'll go hand in hand with jiu-jitsu,
right.
Which you won't know it until you try it. You know, like being able to be conscious while rolling.
Yeah,
it's huge. Yeah, if you get caught in your mind in the fight or flight, your jiu-jitsu sucks. You know, when you're able to breathe and stay relaxed, that's when it's good. So, you gotta calm the mind before your jiu-jitsu gets good.
Wow.
Yeah.
All right. Well, we don't have too much time left, and I don't want to short the mind aspect of it, but I think we should at least touch on that. And, I mean, you kind of just alluded to it that, you know, jiu-jitsu, I, from what I gather, I haven't experienced it myself because I don't have any experience with jiu-jitsu, but that seems like a mind and body thing, and obviously it incorporates the soul too, or can.
Yeah.
You know, once you get to that point, like you said, where you get past the I want to beat people up stage.
Right. Yeah.
And I know it definitely is for you because it's also your career. You know,
yeah.
This is your business, your passion.
Mm-hmm.
It's a physical expression. But I think the mind is, you know, a very important part of all of this too.
Yeah. If it wasn't for the mind, a lot more people would even try it or even walk through the door. You know, you get this mentality where, well, I could beat up everybody, you know. So, but you don't even want to try step one, you know, and then that's not the vibe we're bringing there. So I just want to make it, whoever's listening aware of that, where everyone there is friends, everyone's trying to help each other, no one's there to hurt each other. You're going to learn how to defend yourself, yes. But you can come in, have a good time, be safe, go home with, you know, a dislocated rib here and there. but that's about it.
Right.
Yeah, I think the mind thing, I think fear holds us back from a lot.
Mm-hmm.
And we live in a culture of fear. We're taught to be fearful of everything, like the great whites you were talking about before. It's the same. We're inundated with this. So really, if you can slow yourself down, get away, go out into nature, you're going to really feel your true essence, and you'll be able to really walk through that jungle of crap that's being inundated into your body and mind every day.
Yep.
So your mind will take back what it needs.
Yep.
Right.
Speaking of nature, something about moving water, like a river that I don't know what it is, but if it's a stagnant pond hanging on like a stagnant pond, your mind stays stagnant on moving water. Somehow thoughts will go crazy for a little bit, but it's like it does the meditating for you, I guess is the best way I can put it.
Yeah,
it's pretty cool. Like I go down to Union River every day for an hour or two, just sit on a rock out there. I was just there before I came here.
That's so weird. It's weird that we've never run into each other down there, because I go do the exact same thing.
Really?
Probably a couple times a week.
Yeah, yeah.
I go down. I usually try to go around sunset, you know, just because that lighting helps me and the stillness before sunset. But, and I do the same thing, and I do kind of a visual exercise that helps remind me of my smallness, mm-hmm. and not in an inferiority, you know, kind of ego kind of way, but more of my involvement in this universe and this bigger picture, you know, that oneness. You know, I visualize that water and where it's going.
Mm.
And that the water doesn't know, you know, each molecule of water doesn't know where it's going or why it's going that way. It just does. It flows, and it all flows to the bigger ocean, and it's all tied together. It's all connected, all the water. And I just picture that movement, and it helps me get away from my little bullshit for that day.
Yeah.
So, but that's crazy you mentioned that. Because I was going to say it, and I was going to say, well, now, you know, people know where to find me. Hopefully nobody listening.
We should not, edit that out because it's going to be packed.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
That's going to suck.
It's the Kandusk egg.
Yeah, that's what we meant to say.
Look at that. Build a hotel on it.
Yeah. Huge spiritual retreat.
It's no longer my rock anymore.
Yeah. Wow, that's crazy. That's pretty cool, man.
Yeah, for me, it's just that somehow it does something where I don't even need to visualize. It does the work for me. It's strange. It's like, because meditation is work for me. Sitting on Union River does it for me.
Yeah.
That's the best way I can put it, you know. So.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
I find, too, that, you know, there is something about water, and if you believe in the hokey, you know, astrology stuff, somebody brought up to me that the fact that I'm an Aquarius, which I guess I never really made the connection, but water has always had a lot of significance to me, and I guess it's a water sign.
Oh, cool.
For what it's worth, but
I'm Pisces, so I'm with you.
All right, there we go. Yeah. But submerging myself, I've found, is just a huge thing for me. And, you know, again, along the same lines, it kind of does it for you. Mm-hmm. And I just, that's one of my conditions in life. No matter where my journey takes me, I feel like I have to be close to the ocean or close to water. I can never see myself landlocked. I just feel claustrophobic. But
you don't want to move to Kansas?
Definitely not going to Kansas anytime soon. But when I fully submerge myself, that's when I can really escape, because it's so quiet. And again, that's why I'm interested in the floating, because it's, you know, it just voids all of your senses. There's none of the sound and the stress. It's like you can leave it all behind. Yep. And, you know, I just love jumping into a lake and just being under the water, as long as my body will allow and as long as it's, you know, safe for me.
Mm-hmm. That's why John and I are starting a water polo team. It's going to be this coming spring.
Nice. Yes. I'm in.
You in?
Let's do it.
Mental water polo.
That's the newest thing. new business direction for you.
Here we go.
Awesome. Well, I think we've pretty much touched on everything that I had to talk about and more. One last note, you know, getting back to the religion thing or Christianity, I had kind of a note here to myself that prayer is an element of my spirituality,
mm-hmm.
and not in the traditional sense. For me, I pray for God, lack of a better word, or my higher powers will for me, you know, what I'm best suited for in this universe, how I can best contribute. I used to pray more for specific things.
Red Tonka truck.
Yeah, that's right, yeah. Or the famous foxhole prayer, like, oh shit, get me out of this and I'll never do it again.
Right.
You know, as I'm in the back of a cop car, that type of prayer. But, you know, I saw on Facebook the other day, and you know, God bless the guy. But the guy posted on Facebook, I'm cancer-free. Test came back. I knew God had my back. I prayed for it and blah, blah, blah. And I'm thinking, all right, I'm really glad this guy doesn't have cancer. You know, that's great news. Mm-hmm. But the whole concept of I prayed for this, therefore that's why this happened, just seemed really narcissistic to me. Because my first thought was, well, what about the guy that just opened his Facebook that got diagnosed with cancer?
Mm-hmm.
You know, did God not have his back? Did God not like him as much? Or did he just not pray hard?
He didn't tithe 5%.
10%.
10% tithing.
It's gone up. Inflation. You got to adjust for inflation.
10.5 for you, buddy.
Yeah. But so to me, that, you know, speaks volumes to the whole prayer thing, you know.
Yeah.
and how narcissistic we can be to think that, you know, and I've known people that have been that way when it comes to Christianity. It's like, oh, just ask God and he'll give it to you.
Right.
He's like, well, why you and not this other person, you know? And so I don't know.
I see what you mean about asking for the guidance. Is that what you're talking about?
Right.
Yeah. Compared to put me on the path I'm supposed to be on that the higher power would like, you know.
Right.
That compared to I need money for my electric bill.
Yeah.
It's
yeah.
called loafing or working.
Yeah. Yeah, that's pretty much it. Yeah.
Yes.
God's
put me on the dole or I'm going to go get a job.
That's true, because honestly, that, you know, for me, if I start getting specific in prayer or what I'm looking for from the universe, that I'm in my will.
Yeah.
You know, and I'm in self. And it's impossible for me to get out of self and get out of my will if I'm being specific like that. Because, okay, say I have no money and I can't pay my light bill. So if I pray for, okay, give me the money so I can pay this light bill, yeah, if that happens, that may not be the right path. Maybe the right path is that I'm supposed to get evicted or get the power shut off to learn a lesson. Or maybe because I shouldn't be here, maybe my path should take me somewhere else. You know, as long as I'm doing the work and doing the next right thing, I can't sit back and be lazy and be like, oh, well, you know, it's God's will. Whatever's going to happen, happens. So mm-hmm.
God is an enabler.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, what I say, beauty is found in the darkest places. So you might need to be homeless for a little bit.
Oh. Well, I think that is a perfect place to end. Thanks for coming on, guys.
Thank you, sir.
Thank you.
Thanks for listening. If you like the show, let people know. Spread the word. Don't forget to like our Facebook page. Check out our YouTube channel and follow us on Twitter. If you have any questions or things you'd like to hear on the show, let us know by emailing us at twodowneastdudes@gmail.com. That's the number 2downeastdudes@gmail.com. If you'd like to contribute to the show, please click on the Amazon banner on our website at www.twodowneastdudes.com. Again, that's the number 2downeastdudes.com. It doesn't cost any more, but we do get a small percentage of the purchase price. You can also feel free to donate to us directly via our PayPal link on the website. Come on, dude!